you're a QuickBooks customer looking to grow your business without the growing pains, you need the Intuit ERP. Upgrade to Intuit Enterprise Suite in a matter of hours. It's the AI-native ERP from the makers of QuickBooks. Learn more at intuit.com/ERP.
This is Sarah Spain from Good Game with Sarah Spain, brought to you in part by Vital Farms. Let me tell you why Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs are the only eggs I have in my fridge. The hens. They're living the good life. Fresh air, sunshine, and wide-open pastures. I use my Vital Farms for my famous frittatas. And you could trace your eggs back to the farm they came from. Check the carton for the farm name, pop it into vitalfarms.com/farm, and boom, you're looking at the pasture. So next time you're in the store, look for the black carton in the egg aisle and visit vitalfarms.com to learn more. Vital Farms. Good eggs. No shortcuts.
I started my first business when I was 12, mowing lawns for about $5 a yard. I learned if you do the job right, people trust you and customers care that you show up and do what you say you're going to do. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Doors. From garage door repairs to upgrades, we show up, we stand behind every job. We only use the best parts and springs guaranteed to last a lifetime. When you care about the people you serve, you work harder and it shows. Call Don's Garage Doors today or schedule online at donsgaragedoors.com.
When it comes to garage doors, no one knows more.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/ScorecardPlus for details.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
July 2nd, 2025, Ada County Courthouse, Boise, Idaho. Brian Koberger is standing in a crisply pressed shirt and a paisley tie, his hands folded on the table, his posture rigid, his expression flat. Judge Stephen Hippler is reading names out loud. Madison Mogan, Kaylee Gonzalez, Zanna Kernodle, Ethan Chapin. Four names, four human beings. And after each name, the same question, how do you plead? And five times, once for burglary and four times for murder in the first degree, the same answer from the same mouth, guilty. No hesitation, no wavering, no emotion, no explanation. The judge asked him multiple times, are you thinking clearly? Yes. Has anyone promised you anything beyond this agreement? No. Has anyone threatened you? No. Are you pleading guilty because you are guilty? Yes. Did you kill Madison Mogan? Yes. Did you kill Kaylee Gonzalez? Yes. Did you kill Zanna Kernodle? Yes. Did you kill Ethan Chapin? Yes. Five answers, one word each. The heaviest syllables ever spoken in that courtroom. And he delivered them the way someone might confirm a dental appointment. The families were sobbing. Christy Gonzalez was shaking. Ben Mogan was breathing through a handkerchief. And the man responsible for all of it sat there like a monument to nothing and admitted he did it. And now with Koberger serving four consecutive life sentences at Idaho Maximum Security Institution, or at a Idaho Maximum Security Institution, a former FBI sniper turned thriller writer named Christopher Whitcomb has published a book called Broken Plea that asks you to believe none of that matters. That the evidence was too weak, that the defense had a winning hand, that Koberger failed for no reason. And the real story is buried in a chain of custody forms and diluted bloodstains in a dark SUV nobody bothered to identify. That's the pitch. That is what you are being asked to accept, in my opinion, when you pick up this book. And before anyone decides to accept it, we should probably check the receipts, because Whitcomb himself told News Nation in an interview promoting the book, and I need you to hear this clearly, there's no smoking gun, there's no secret evidence. They never had this stuff that they were going to disclose at trial. The author of the book that is supposed to blow this case wide open is telling you on camera that there's nothing new behind the curtain. So what exactly is being sold here? Christopher, if there's nothing new and you're like, yeah, and you're kind of taking a step back as you're being questioned on this a bit, I get it. But your book presents things a little directly, a little differently than what we're seeing in some of these interviews. What are we being sold here, I guess, is the question. Not facts, a feeling, a carefully constructed feeling of doubt, assembled almost entirely from the opinions of people who were paid to create it. And that is where this conversation has to start. And I'd love to get your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we go through our discussion of Broken Plea here. Because if you read Broken Plea without understanding who is actually talking, you'll walk away believing things that experienced legal professionals flatly dispute. Nearly every major claim of this book comes from defense-hired experts and can be debunked by very simple explanation. But the problem I have with the book is there's so much that's just left as, and if this had happened this way, this would have been the outcome. No, it really wouldn't have, because it wouldn't have happened that way. It couldn't have happened that way. You're missing key elements to your argument and the story, and it's not just, if it went this way, it would have gone that. No, it wouldn't. Sells books, but I'm telling you right now, the book is about 12 hours long. If you read it, don't waste 12 hours of your life. That's what I'm telling you, number one. You'll find out all you need to know in this piece right here. Nearly every major claim in this book comes from defense-hired experts, primarily a criminologist named Brent Turvey and a former FBI behavioral individual named Christopher Holland. Both were retained by Ann Taylor's office. Both were paid to find problems with the prosecution's case. And that is not a criticism of their work. That's a literal description of their professional function. They were advocates. The advocacy failed. Their client pled guilty anyway, and now Turvey is on a media tour doing interviews with Fox News, the Idaho Statesman, and anyone else who will listen, laying out arguments that were supposed to be delivered in a courtroom but never were. And here is the part that should give you a little bit of pause. His own client's defense team has publicly disavowed him. In their first public statement since Koberger's arrest in December 2022, attorneys Ann Taylor, Elissa Massoth, and Bika Barlow said they are appalled by Turvey's comments. They said he signed a confidentiality agreement that remains in effect. They said he was hired solely to provide an opinion about the crime scene. Nothing else. And is now speaking on topics outside of his areas of expertise. When the defense team that hired you publicly says you are out of your lane and violating your agreement, that's not a whistleblower moment. That's a credibility collapse. And Whitcomb himself, the author, openly acknowledges in the book that he holds no forensic certification from any accredited organization, no criminology degree, no DNA expertise. He reviewed files provided to him by defense sources and built a narrative around what defense experts told him. This is a defense case published as a hardcover. It is not an independent investigation. It is an argument that lost in the only venue that matters, the one where the defendant gets to decide, repackaged for a reading audience that does not have the benefit of cross-examination. So let's take a look at the arguments themselves and see how they hold up when you actually apply even a modest amount of scrutiny to it. The single most explosive claim in Broken Plea involves the DNA. The book alleges that a private laboratory called Ortham, contracted by the Idaho State Police, developed a DNA profile from the knife sheath and traced it to four brothers whose last name was not Koberger. The book frames this as a bombshell. If the police found someone else's DNA and buried the results when they did not match the suspect they wanted, it's a genuinely alarming claim if you don't understand how investigative genetic genealogy actually works. And the book is counting on you not understanding, because here's the reality when you make a claim like that. Genetic genealogy, It doesn't produce a direct match in the way a fingerprint does. It builds a family tree. It identifies genetic relatives, people who share DNA segments with the unknown source, and then uses traditional genealogical research to narrow the three down to a specific individual. Finding four brothers as genetic relatives is not a dead end. It's a normal intermediate step. Those brothers are not branches on a tree, not a root. They might not even be technically brothers. They're four different people. Ortham needed access to a larger database to continue narrowing. The FBI had those databases. The transition from a private lab to the FBI when the private lab's resources were exhausted is a standard escalation in forensic science. It's not exactly a conspiracy. And here's the detail that collapses the entire narrative. Koberger's DNA was ultimately confirmed through a completely independent process. A Q-tip recovered from his family's trash in Pennsylvania was analyzed using traditional short tandem repeat comparison, a totally separate methodology from the genetic genealogy, two distinct scientific paths using different technologies and different sample sources converged on the same man. If people were framing Brian Koberger, they would not just need to manipulate the lab in Texas, they would also need to fake his car on surveillance cameras, circling the neighborhood, fabricate his phone pinging nearby cell towers, and somehow get his father's DNA from a trash pull to independently match the familiar profile from the sheath. That's not a frame job. That is convergence from multiple independent sources pointing at one person. The book wants you to focus on one thread and actually ignore the rope. The book kind of hangs itself on its own rope, in my opinion. The second major claim involves a chain of custody of the K-Bar knife sheath, the leather case found in Madison Mogan's bed that carried trace DNA linked to Koberger. Turvey alleges the chain of custody and the form was filled out after the fact by a single person, that the documentation was fabricated and that the sheath would have been ruled inadmissible at trial. I mean, it sounds pretty wow when you hear that, right? And then you look at the actual story. He told the Idaho Statesman that somebody sat down and fabricated and falsified evidence for a chain of custody, allegedly. He told Fox News Digital that this evidence should have, by any competent jurist, been ruled inadmissible. And that, quote, in most cases, in most jurisdictions, it would be. Well, that's one man's opinion. And here's what multiple legal professionals who actually practice law in Idaho said in response on the record. Moscow Police Chief Anthony Dallinger told the Statesman that his department had not used written chain of custody logs in over a decade. They use electronic barcodes. The barcode is on the evidence bag. The handwritten sticker Turvey is alarmed about, it's supplemental documentation. It's not the primary tracking system. It doesn't matter. The evidence bag itself has an unbroken seal signed by lead detective Brett Payne and a second signature from ISP forensic specialist Shannon Arredondo. An unbroken seal means the evidence was not tampered with between collection and laboratory receipt. Twin Falls County Prosecutor Grant Loebs told the Statesman that the chain of custody can be established through live testimony of every person who handled the evidence. You call them to the stand, they testify, the log is supporting paperwork, not the sole proof. It's digital, dipshit. Boise defense attorney Edwina Elcox said even if the documentation was flawed, the evidence would not have been excluded. It would have gone to weight, meaning the jury would decide how seriously to take it, and they would still see it. And retired NYPD Inspector Paul Morrow reviewed the evidence bag photos and said he did not see a significant problem. He called the chain of custody attack very indicative of what you do when you have absolutely no defense. You put the procedure on trial instead of the facts. Would help to actually, you know, talk about a procedure that was actually taking place, whereas the argument in this book doesn't even line up to reality. It's just one person did, like, it's digital. Now your argument doesn't mean shit, because the supplemental note Yeah, it very well could have been done by one person, basing it off of the digital log that shows exactly who and did what to the exact microsecond that an item was scanned. So you have one defense expert claiming inadmissibility, and you have a police chief, a county prosecutor, a defense attorney, and a retired NYPD inspector all disagreeing with that. The book gives you one side of that ledger, not the other side that says, well, I get where you came to that conclusion, but it turns out your thinking is just wrong. It's not factual. It's not based on how we do this. So rather than making it into a book, I don't know, maybe check your work beforehand and go, oh, well, this claim I'm going to make doesn't really stand. I don't know. I do it every day, and I'm doing a podcast, not publishing a book. Oh, and by the way, it's Gonsalves, not Goncalves or Colvis or however you've said it 50 times in your book. I get it. I said it wrong the first couple of days of recovering the story 3 years ago. You wrote a book. You did an audio book, and you still couldn't get the damn victims' names right? Seriously? Again, I get it. First time you're reading something, it does look a little confusing. But in the final edit of the audiobook, we can't even get the damn victims' names right. Correctly enunciated. Seriously. 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 And we're supposed to take you seriously when you can't do that fact in a book. It's not like a live presentation where somebody may mispronounce something if they're not familiar with it. I get there are plenty of reasons. We've mispronounced names on this show all the time. But when you're coming to publishing your actual book, you can't get that right at that level on the publishing of the book. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. If you can't cross that T or dot that I, it does make me question a little bit more about how thoroughly this was investigated, how deep anybody went to really, I don't know, have a loving critic that says, maybe this work doesn't quite add up the way we thought it did. And that's fine. Tell that story if your goal is to get to the truth, not to get to an angle that's different than everybody else's to sell more books. Because I get it, it's creepy. It's spooky. In a sick way, to some, it's sexy that there's something out here that's different than everybody's story on this case. Because really, there is one story to this case. Brian Koberg is a fucking monster. He destroyed multiple lives when he took the lives of those students. There's something clearly not right in his head. He demonstrates it left and right. It's not hard to look at Brian Koberg and go, I don't get why he did it, but I get how someone like him did. He's not an enigma. He's not anything that amazing. It's a very broken brain. I guess my question is, how broken is yours if you're like ignoring blatant facts in this case and trying to go down another road, pitching to an audience that may not do their homework enough to hear anything other than what you're saying to them. I don't know. Getting the truth of a story out is paramount to me. I don't like going down roads where I'm just presenting my opinion or my, because my opinion does not matter. I don't have an angle in a story. My angle is the truth and getting to it. And once we see it and we find it and it's there and it's clear, we're going to keep shining lights on it. That's not my opinion. That's me with a flashlight going, hey, look. And if you're over here going, well, what about this? And I can go, well, the answer to your question is that. And it's not what you think it is. And standing over there, continue to scream about something you think you found, even though you know it's not. That's just irresponsible. That's just, I don't know. It's not a universe I operated, and I hope a lot of you don't either. But it seems, you know, you're going to have authors and such that do. I don't know. I don't know how you get this far with a piece like this. And no one has said, you know, everything you're saying and basing your story on is kind of weak. Or flat out bullshit. That's my opinion. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'd be very curious to understand the construction of this book a little bit better. Because right now, as I'm looking at it, I'm just, and I've tried reading it. I've gotten several hours in, and I'm like, eh, ick. Not because it disagrees with me, but because it just, it doesn't present fact. The third pillar of the book is the theory that these crimes required two assailants. Whitcomb and his sources argue that multiple weapons were used, that Ethan Chapin could not have slept through the attack on Zanna, and that the blood patterns suggest a cleanup and that the physical logistics of the crime make a lone attack impossible. It is a detailed and elaborate theory. It has one catastrophic problem. The man who committed the murder says he did it alone. Koberger pled guilty as a sole actor. He was not required to protect an accomplice. He was already receiving life without parole. If someone else was in that house with him, he had every incentive to say so and zero reason not to. He did not. The claim about multiple weapons, different wound profiles can be produced by a single knife used at different angles. Depths and orientations is well established in forensic pathology and does not require a second blade. The claim about Ethan not waking up, his toxicology showed a blood alcohol content of 0.122 combined with another level of amphetamine of 260 nanograms per milliliter. The crash phase of Adderall mixed with alcohol can produce sedation deep enough to sleep through significant noise, particularly in someone who had been drinking and partying for hours. The claim about diluted blood in the common areas, the house hosted a beer pong party that same night, spilled drinks, condensation, previously used cleaning products and surfaces, all of those can dilute blood on contact without requiring a mysterious cleanup crew. And if a second killer existed, 3 years of investigation produced not a single piece of corroborating evidence. No single DNA profile, no second DNA profile, no second vehicle confirmed at the scene, no accomplice identified, no jailhouse informant ever reporting Koberger mentioning another person, nothing. And ask yourself a question. Do you think Koberger really could work well with one other human being? At all, anywhere on this planet, ever? Do you see him as being someone's going to buddy up with another killer? Like, hey, let's do this together. I don't see Koberger being very capable of communicating with a dog effectively for more than 5 minutes. More or less another human being. Oh, and there's a track record of that, too, of not being able to work well with others. So the idea that is other folks were involved is, hey, let's all go in there and do, like, it just doesn't add, and there's no evidence for it either. So then pulling it out of the ether, I don't, where are you coming from? Again, at the beginning, this strikes me just as such a book that was put together by someone who got into this late and didn't absorb the information. I don't know. I mean, I guess anybody could go down another path if you're not as versed in the material, but I'm sorry, I am versed in it, and it's not this. It's, I guess the reference point I would make is, it's like watching, a child tackle adult material. And I'm not saying anything dirty. I'm just saying like college level or high school level, or a couple grade above level material. And they're younger and they're trying to do work that's a couple grades ahead of them. That's what this book feels like, in my opinion. Where it's like, oh, bless your heart. Isn't that cute? You thought it might be this. Yeah, well, we all did too for a nanosecond about 3 years ago. And then we looked at the facts and came to a different conclusion. You're still there. And someone gave you a book deal. Huh. Take the book deal out of it. You're just another raging person on the internet with not a lot of credibility. And I'm sorry, you got some credibility. You got some, like, history. Like, what the... Are you sure this is the lane you want to go into on true crime? Well, I guess you already fired your shot. So I don't really know how you go back from it now, but I don't know. I got questions. It there's a lot of this book that just makes me shake my head. And there's one of two things. Either the author genuinely did not know the answers to some of these questions, or they are so convinced that there's another answer to some of these questions when there just really truly is not. And then we get into everybody's version of facts. Facts aren't optional. Facts are facts. This is where the theory here, we're talking about the accomplice angle and all that. This is where every theory in Broken Plea crashes into a wall it can't climb. If the evidence was this fragile, if the chain of custody was broken, if the DNA was questionable, if the sheath was planted, if a second killer existed, if Brian Koberger had the defense of a lifetime, he had Turvey's chain of custody analysis. He had Holland's behavioral assessment. He had Barlow's DNA challenges. He had a cell tower expert ready to contest the FBI's methodology. He had a trial date set for August. He had every single argument that Christopher Wickham is now charging $30 to read. And he looked at all of it. He read the reports. He consulted a psychologist. He talked to his parents, his attorney, walked him through every option. And then he stood up in a courtroom full of grieving families and admitted to every count. Either he is guilty and the evidence confirmed what he already knew, or he's innocent and voluntarily chose to spend the rest of his life in a cell rather than let his defense team use the arguments this book says would have won. One of those explanations requires common sense. The others require you believe in a conspiracy so vast that it includes the defendant cooperating with his own wrongful conviction. Wickham himself said Ann Taylor told a defense source that the decision was his. So the man with the most to gain from fighting chose not to fight, and the people who were supposed to fight for him are now fighting with each other in public while selling their unused ammunition to publishers? The Gonzalez family said it after the plea. You call them the Gonclaves family in the book, by the way, because you didn't do your work. All it would have taken is just watching an interview on YouTube, one of hundreds, watching a news story, one of thousands, to learn how not to enunciate one of the victim's family's names right. But we can't even do that, can we? In the book. The Gonzalez family said it after the plea, and it bears repeating here. This plea did not represent the victim's families. It represented an easy way out and no answers. They wanted a full confession. They wanted the location of the weapon. They wanted to know why their daughter was targeted with such savagery that her own face was unrecognizable. They got none of it. And now instead of answers, they get this. More noise, more theories, more strangers building careers and selling books off the worst moment of their lives. Four families burying their children, and the cottage industry around their grief keeps growing. Judge Hippler said it at sentencing, and he was right. The more we struggle to extract a reason, the more power and control we give him. And then he said what needed to be said. It's time to end Mr. Koberger's 15 minutes of fame. It's time that he co-signed to the isolation of perpetual incarceration. Whitcomb said it himself, and he was right when he said it. I'm not saying this is a wrongful conviction. He pled guilty. He's a well-educated, intelligent, grown man. So what is broken plea? Is it a defense case that lost its client, dressed up as journalism, and sold to an audience that will never have a chance to cross-examine a single claim? Brian Koberger did not need a book to save him. He had lawyers and experts and sealed hearings and a trial date 6 weeks away. He had every argument this book contains. And he weighed all of it. Every chain of custody form, every blood splatter analysis, every motion in limine, and said guilty. The families of Kaylee, Maddie, Zanna, and Ethan deserve better than having that word questioned by people who are selling something. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love to have the author on the show. And maybe we will. I don't know. We're trying to dig in to do that. I don't know. The author wants to come on the show after this. But I'd like to hear him out. I'd like to hear where, you know, okay, you bring this, we'll bring that, and let's see where this lands. I mean, where, and some people, look, there's pro-burgers out there that still, despite mountains of evidence, are going to believe what they're going to believe. People are going to be people. And this just might be another example of that. I don't know. I'm interested in truth and facts. I don't know about you. Hopefully you are. We'll see. My advice on the book, don't waste your time. It ain't worth it. But if you want to watch a car crash in slow motion and just cringe a lot going, oh, that doesn't seem like it's based on it, then you Google through it and you're like, oh, wait, yeah, that doesn't add up, does it? Where are they getting this? Why are they making this claim? Oh, this can be debunked. Yeah, then you're going to get a lot of that in this book. In my opinion, again, I don't know. Everybody's got their own motivations for doing what they do. I don't know what this is here. I'm not going to profess to, but in my opinion, don't waste your time.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
A noisy garage door is a cry for help. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Door Service. Most repairs are simple, but if left untreated, they can turn into costly repairs. Your garage door works hard every day, and a little maintenance goes a long way. We fix garage doors fast with quality parts designed to last a lifetime. Over 90,000 five-star reviews don't happen by accident. They happen by putting people first. Fixing your garage doors is what we do. From repairs to upgrades, call Don's Garage Door Service today.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
We're hiring at Don's Garage Doors. No experience, no problem. We provide full training, a brand new van, top-of-the-line tools, a gas card, and steady jobs with weekly pay. This isn't just a job. It's a career with real growth, great pay, and job security. Our team members go from training to six figures, and we're ready to help you do the same. Don't wait. Apply now at donsgaragedoors.com.
From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U.
Did you say someone got shot?
November 2006, a college football star on his way to NFL dreams, gunned down in broad daylight.
Just bawling, crying, and he said, Coach, they killed him.
weapon, missing witnesses, conflicting accounts, and for years, no arrest.
She insinuated that the Miami PD had done nothing, and it became a little bit more accusatory.
The case goes cold, rumors spread, and the truth gets buried. Until now.
His world could come crashing down. According to him, it was over.
The ending, something no one saw coming, because this story isn't over yet. From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. Binge the full season right now, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're hiring at Don's Garage Doors. No experience, no problem. We provide full training, a brand new van, top-of-the-line tools, a gas card, and steady jobs with weekly pay. This isn't just a job. It's a career with real growth, great pay, and job security. Our team members go from training to six figures, and we're ready to help you do the same. Don't wait. Apply now at donsgaragedoors.com.
We're hiring at Don's Garage Doors. No experience, no problem. We provide full training, a brand new van, top-of-the-line tools, a gas card, and steady jobs with weekly pay. This isn't just a job. It's a career with real growth, great pay, and job security. Our team members go from training to six figures, and we're ready to help you do the same. Don't wait. Apply now at donsgaragedoors.com.
We're hiring at Don's Garage Doors. No experience, no problem. We provide full training, a brand new van, top-of-the-line tools, a gas card, and steady jobs with weekly pay. This isn't just a job. It's a career with real growth, great pay, and job security. Our team members go from training to six figures, and we're ready to help you do the same. Don't wait. Apply now at donsgaragedoors.com.
We're hiring at Don's Garage Doors. No experience, no problem.
We provide full training, a brand new van, top-of-the-line tools, a gas card, and steady jobs with weekly pay. This isn't just a job. It's a career with real growth, great pay, and job security. Our team members go from training to six figures, and we're ready to help you do the same.
Don't wait. Apply now at donsgaragedoors.com.